This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Ask your doctor about how HBOT can help you achieve your optimal health. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots of time on this beautiful weekend to share vital health information with you. So you can start calling 888-302-3684. That's our number. We got lots of stuff on tap, and we'll share that with you momentarily. 888-302-3684. And I think I'll start the program by talking about running shoes. Running shoes are a bit of a personal fetish of mine. I've owned scores and scores of running shoes throughout my running career. And there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about running shoes. And among the controversies about running shoes is how often should you replace your running shoes? Some people say you should replace your running shoes after somewhere between 300 and 500 miles of running. Now, that may seem like an awful lot to some of you couch potatoes, but 300 to 500 miles of running accumulates pretty quickly for somebody who runs, say, perhaps 25 miles a week. That's on the high end of running training. Personally, you know, I may run anywhere from 5 to 10 miles a week. Not all that much. Because other times I'm cross-training, I'm doing cycling and swimming, training for triathlons. But, you know, ultimately that builds up because, let's do the math. 10 miles a week, 40 miles a month. After just about 3 or 4 months, it's quite a lot of mileage that you may be accumulating. And the notion is that even though your shoes may look okay, they're dead from the standpoint of cushioning. And that has to do with a substance called EVA, which is a cushioning substance that's part of the soles of most modern running shoes. EVA is what gives your shoes the bounce that you experience when you have that ecstatic experience of running with a brand new pair of running shoes. They feel light. They feel cushioned. And you feel like you're taking wing as you run effortlessly on these shoes that have the delightful spring of brand new shoes. And so the idea is, well, maybe, just maybe, even though the shoes seem to be perfectly fine looking, even though they're not worn away, torn, dirty, that because of the lack of bounce, you may be courting injury if you don't refresh your running shoes every 300 to 500 miles. Some of this, of course, may be hype on the part of the companies that make these running shoes. They're usually run $100 and upwards a pop for good quality running shoes, top-of-the-line running shoes, sometimes approaching $200 or more. So what's the real deal? Well, according to research, there really is something about that bounce that you experience with brand new shoes, because the bounce factor actually depreciates fairly quickly with running. According to research, if you start out at 100% of bounce, by just 60 miles of running in new running shoes, it was fairly soon, you lose about 30% of that bounce. You come down to about 70% of your bounce factor. And that may be why it just doesn't seem the same after you get these new shoes and you say, whoa, these shoes were great a couple of weeks ago, but yeah, they don't feel so great anymore. You know, they don't, you know, they're okay, but they don't have that exquisite, bouncy quality, that makes you feel like you're running on, a cushioned surface. And, however, on the other hand, the depreciation of the bounce factor, according to research, isn't that much over the next few hundred miles. It may go down to 60% at 300 to 500 miles, but it's not going to go down much more. So the suggestion is that, you know, unless you need that virgin EVA feeling in your shoes, which could run you a new pair of running shoes every couple of months, you pretty much can run long distances in those old running shoes. It's not going to make a big difference unless you want to reincarnate that experience of a brand new virgin EVA sole. So, you know, another thing that goes on with running shoes is you go to a running store, and many of you have had this experience, and many of them have treadmills, and they do what's called a gait analysis. Or they even have you stand on something which analyzes your arch. And they make some generalizations, which it turns out are really junk science. High arch runners, for example, are labeled over-supinators. That has to do with the position of your footfall when you run. And they're given a more cushioned shoe. Normal arch runners are labeled neutral. They're given a what is called a stability shoe. And low arch runners are labeled over-pronators. That's supposed to be bad. And they're recommended a motion control shoe because over-pronation is thought to be a major cause of injury. But this is all an oversimplification. This system, according to a review that I'm reading by a guy in Runner's World, it totally lacks the specificity required to cater for the immensely varied physiological makeup of each and every runner. So it's a lot more than, you know, just that. And then when you stand on that foot pad to evaluate your arch type, you know, this notion that what your arches are doing when you're standing on a pad stationary will be replicated once you start running, it's really not the case. It's been consistently disproved. Your foot assumes a different configuration when running, and that's hard to capture in an analysis in a running store. It turns out that, yeah, that treadmill may be useful, but the only value of the treadmill is that you can put on a pair of running shoes, and without damaging them on the asphalt outside the store, you can run and try them on and see if they feel good. It's a subjective thing. Does the shoe feel good? If the shoe fits, wear it. And even this pronation thing, they say, is exaggerated. According to research, foot pronation is not associated with increased injury risk in novice runners wearing a neutral shoe, which they shouldn't be wearing, according to, you know, this whole myth about pronation. They, you know, neutral shoes are for people with normal arches. Well, over pronating people don't seem to have more injuries when they're wearing a neutral shoe. And I just found that that's the case for me too. I've worn all manner of shoes. I've worn neutral shoes. They feel fine. They don't create more of an injury potential for me. So the conclusion is that the way they fit you in shoes in most running stores is no more accurate than flipping a coin. And you just, you know, use the treadmill to see if you like the shoe rather than relying on their suggestions. There's another thing going on is that, remember those minimalist shoes? They were ultra-thin soles, and the idea was to replicate barefoot running. That was the trend a couple of years ago. It was thought, like, wow, that's a lot better for your foot than using these heavily cushioned shoes, which change your gait and ultimately, paradoxically, on a thinner shoe with less cushioning, you're going to get more injuries because you're deceived into believing that your feet are protected when hit the ground, and therefore the energy is transmitted to your knees and your hips. Some theory around along those lines was very prevalent a couple of years ago. Well, turns out a lot of people opted for these minimalist shoes and beat their feet to hell. And therefore, there's been a backlash against minimalist shoes. And now people are going for what's called maximalist shoes. They're ultra cushioned. It's like running on sponges. And they even have names like fresh foam, the idea being that they really protect your shoes. You know, it's kind of a pendulum swing in foot apparel. And so a new study analyzes whether people run better and are more injury-free in ultra-cushioned shoes versus normal shoes. These are called maximalist shoes. The conclusion, the shoes didn't really make a difference. The researchers invited 10 runners, all around 28 years old, to run two different treadmill tests. And the runners ran each test twice, once wearing a neutral shoe and once in a maximalist trainer, very spongy, well-cushioned shoe. The shoes didn't make a difference in performance. There was no change in speed or even VO2 max, which is the amount of oxygen consumption these well-trained runners evidenced. And according to the study, it seems that the cushioning of the shoe, extreme versus regular, plays no role in the influence of running economy. So bottom line, when it comes to shoes, if it feels good, wear it. Wear it as long as it feels comfortable. There's remains a lot of controversy about the best kind of shoe. The best kind of shoe for you is the shoe that fits good and it makes your run feel awesome. 888-302-3684 is our number. We invite your phone calls. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic aged garlic extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic aged garlic extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684. In just a moment, I'm going to share with you what I consider one of the most harebrained medical innovations of recent years, just approved by the FDA. But first, let's take some calls. Let's talk to Sheila in Queens. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. My question is for a eggs
I didn't catch that.
And dairy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How much and which vitamins and minerals, and if there is anything else they can do?
Sheila? You know what? You're probably on a, you probably want to get right on the phone because I think you're using a speakerphone.
I am actually.
Okay. So your question is about what vitamins and minerals should you take if you are a vegetarian? Okay. I think I got the question. So vegetarians can do fine, but you got to be careful. Vegetarians tend to sometimes be a little low in protein. The protein that comes from vegetarian sources is maybe a little less utilizable, less balanced. And so sometimes some kind of protein supplement can be beneficial, you know, something like a whey protein product. Or if you're really ultra opposed to using something from an animal source, you can use rice protein, soy protein, lentil protein, the variety of products that are out there that can give you a little boost in your protein intake. Also, vegetarians sometimes, they may actually be a little skimpy in fat. If you want a vegetarian source of fat that's good, maybe some coconut oil. A lot of people think that coconut oil, because it's saturated, is bad for you. That's been disproven. In terms of vitamins and minerals, well, you know, the key one that you might be deficient in is B12. And on the mineral side, iron and zinc tend to be a little skimpy when you're on a vegetarian diet. So those are some of the things you really need to look out for. Fortunately, in a vegetarian diet, you get plenty of folate, which after all comes from foliage. Some vegetarians might benefit from carnitine. Carnitine is really not that available from plant sources. It actually comes from animal muscle. Your body has the ability to synthesize carnitine, but as you age, you may not make as much carnitine. So sometimes we have carnitine to our vegetarians. So that's, you know, pretty much the way it looks. But you got to be careful as a vegetarian. There's also a little bit of a tendency to go too much towards starchy foods and carbohydrates. While vegetarianism can work for some people, it's not for everyone, and you got to plan it carefully. 888-302-3684 is our number. All right, so this very interesting new medical device, which has been produced by a company called Aspire Bariatrics of King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. It's just been approved by the FDA. It is a weight loss treatment. And I'm thinking, you know, okay, great. There's a new innovation in weight loss. Let's look it up. Have you ever seen the way that they tap maple trees for maple syrup? You know, they stick a tap into the bark, and they basically turn a spigot, hang a bucket from the spigot. And what then happens is the maple syrup trickles into the bucket, and you collect maple syrup. Well, this is essentially what this device is like. It is a bizarre stomach tap, which allows people fighting obesity to empty their stomachs before food is digested. The treatment is called Aspire Assist, and it's crazy. They say those with uncontrolled hypertension, binge eating disorder, I mean, this is almost like a surgical form of bulimia, and you know, where literally you can eat, suck the food out of your stomach afterwards, and not experience the consequences of your dietary indiscretions.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor here, president of the Texas Organic Research Center. As you probably know, it's a toxic world out there, but we can do something about it. Become knowledgeable consumers and use products that are safe and healthy, such as natural supplements that help protect the body's cells from toxic exposure. One of my favorites is Reg Active with ME3, the only probiotic proven to actually produce glutathione in the body. It's the body's master antioxidant, unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals and exposure to environmental toxins. Glutathione decreases as we age. RegActive is great for rebuilding it, and I strongly recommend it.
Look for RegActive at Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold. Revolutionary. Remarkable. RegActive.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. A new study suggests that boys who smoke pot may be up to 4 inches shorter. We'll share that study with you in just a moment. But first, let's talk to John in Connecticut. How are you, John?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
Okay. I recently got skin cancer. Squamous cell carcinoma. And I've been a diabetic for a few years, but I've been on insulin type 2. I've been on 20 units for like 3 years.
Yep.
And I went to a dermatologist, and he cut it off. I thought it was a pimple, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I let it go for longer than I should have. And then he cut it off, and then he said, I can't be sure if I got it off.
Yeah.
And I guess I never can be sure. And I know being a type 2 diabetic on insulin increases your chances by a lot of having it come back or spread?
Yeah, it's a curious thing. You know, with most forms of cancer, out-of-control blood sugar fuels cancer growth. And we know that this is the case for example, colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, but it may even be true to some extent for skin cancer. You said he had a squamous cell cancer?
Yeah. Remember, Dr. Atkins used to say that about sugar feeds cancer.
He was a very prescient guy. Turned out he was on the right side of history. So your question is, what can you do to prevent recurrence, I guess, right?
Yeah, he gave me some medication. It's called Aldara, I think it is, or Aldara?
Yeah, there are actually certain medications. I think that may be what's called 5-FU, which is a topical chemotherapy drug that prevents skin cancer from coming back. But, I can look it up. It might be a powerful carotenoid medication. I'm not even sure. But anyway, so what can you do nutritionally to help that? Well, certainly you could, I mean, there's a whole different discussion is you can attack the underlying problem, which is the type 2 diabetes. Now, if you're already insulin dependent, it's going to be a little harder for you to, change your diet, lose weight, and normalize your blood sugar. If you still have the capacity to normalize your blood sugar, some people are past the point where the pancreas works adequately to restore normal blood sugar control. I don't know your situation. What's your height and weight?
I'm 5'9", and I'm about, I go from like 160 to 180, and I'm 56 years old.
Okay, so you're 5'9", 160, 180. It depends on your musculature. That could be fine, but you could also be, losing muscle mass, as many men do, and then some of that weight, and especially with the weight fluctuation, is excess body fat, which promotes insulin resistance, makes you more diabetic. The other issue that happens at 59, and you really should get this checked, is your testosterone. Testosterone declines, and then that slows you down. It changes your muscle composition, and it makes you more insulin resistant. So that's something worth evaluating. Have you had your testosterone checked ever?
I went to you many years ago, and you said the free testosterone was low.
Okay, boom. So you went to me. So what did you do about it at that point? You didn't opt to go on testosterone?
No doctor wants to give it to you.
Oh, okay.
Except for you.
Yeah, well, I might. I might.
I know you would, but they don't want to give it to me.
It's like the soup Nazi. It's like, no testosterone for you. Yeah, but we should really be dispensing testosterone more liberally to men like you who would benefit from it. Your blood sugar would be better controlled. You'd feel more zest and energy, ability to exercise. It would help you retain muscle mass. More muscle mass helps to buffer blood sugar fluctuations in your body. But, okay, let's get to the skin cancer situation. There are a couple of nutrients that are really worth thinking about if you have skin cancer. One, and it's actually been proven, it was a major article in New England Journal of Medicine recently, created a sensation. It's niacinamide. Niacinamide is an inexpensive form of vitamin B3. It's not niacin, which causes flushing, just regular old niacinamide, sometimes referred to as nicotinamide. Niacinamide at 500 milligrams three times daily over a period of 3 to 6 months can really reduce the risk of recurrence of skin cancer. And the effect lasts only for as long as you take it. So if you take it for a while and then stop taking it, well, all right, the skin cancer return. It becomes just as likely as before. The concern when you saw this dermatologist is that most dermatologists who operate on skin cancer these days use something called the Mohs method, where they actually send a pathology specimen to a laboratory where they get a quick read, and they keep cutting and cutting in larger concentric circles until they completely get the cancer, and then they can be assured of the fact that they've gotten the cancer. Your dermatologist apparently thought it wasn't a big deal, sliced it off in the office, and then said, I don't think I've gotten it all. That's a bit of a concern, and next time you get surgery for skin cancer, consider the Mohs method, because your cancer was a little bit more, extensive than originally thought. But, it's a problem. EGCG, another thing that you might use for prevention of recurrence of skin cancer. There's some studies that suggest it might be beneficial. Green tea has many anti-cancer effects, certainly on gastrointestinal cancers, esophageal cancer in particular. But it also may help retard skin cancer. So drink green tea or take EGC capsules. That could also provide some benefit. All right. Hope to see you back again in the office someday. I'm sorry that you weren't able to follow through on our original suggestions, but that happens. 888-302-3684 is our number. Or let's talk about this. Marijuana. There's some good things about marijuana because we're learning that CBD, cannabidiol from marijuana, may have some real utility in treating anxiety, insomnia, headaches, even inflammatory conditions like ulcerative colitis, fibromyalgia. There's a lot of research that needs to be done on a cleaned-up version of marijuana that doesn't have so much the hallucinogenic effects that THC provides, but conveys the benefits of cannabidiol. I think that's there's really going to be a CBD revolution in medicine, and not just as a recreational drug, but as a true medical modality. But when it comes to liberalization of pot laws, one of the consequences of us taking a more enlightened attitude towards medical marijuana, the carryover is that recreational use of marijuana has soared. And I particularly, you know, I don't worry so much about adults. Okay, knock yourself out, do what you want. It's a free country. But when it comes to kids, especially young kids using marijuana, very bad. Very bad. And, you know, maybe hypocritical because I come from a generation where we explored a lot. But I got to say that I never really experimented with marijuana until I got to college age. And now we're seeing kids in high school, junior high school, even elementary school smoking pot. And that's decidedly bad, according to a new study. Boys who smoke cannabis have the potential to be 4 inches shorter. New study finds that youngsters who regularly smoke marijuana are far shorter than their non-smoking peers. They're talking about young boys who smoke pot prior to the onset of puberty. According to the study leader, marijuana use may provoke a stress response. You think that it chills you out, it makes you relax, but actually smoking dope makes the body more stressed in the long term. According to the study author, marijuana use may provoke a stress response that stimulates onset of puberty but suppresses the growth rate. So actually, it's been shown that you go through early puberty, you stop growing. So the later, in effect, that you go through puberty, the greater growth potential you may have. We see this a lot with young girls who may start menstruating at 9 or 10, and they tend to be shorter and more obese. They found that levels of puberty-related hormones, such as testosterone and luteinizing hormone, were increased in the pot smokers, but in contrast, growth hormone levels in the group were decreased. Translation, loss of height up to 4.5 inches in height loss. And, you know, other consequences, super strong cannabis is responsible for a quarter of psychosis cases. Cannabis use shrinks and rewires the brain. Even casual use of cannabis alters brain function at a critical age where the brain literally is hooking up essential neuronal connections. And in addition, for some, cannabis can be highly addictive. You know, they say, well, no, it's not addictive. Well, for many, it's not. But for some, dependency and even serious addiction results with classic withdrawal symptoms. So, you know, bad idea if you're a young kid smoking a lot of pot. 888-302-3684 is our number. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or TryZonaNow.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And our next caller from Lebanon, New Hampshire, Tim, welcome.
Hi, yes, sir. Question, does green tea extract have caffeine in it?
That's a good question. Yeah, in fact, green tea extract is decaffeinated up to 99%. And so you're not going to get a big buzz out of it. Although some people, they get very sensitive people might get a little stimulation from it, but it's not even about the caffeine. There's a thermogenic effect of EGCG. It's a fat-burning effect, but it may be something that, you know, kind of increases your metabolic rate. And some people are a little sensitive to that, but it's not usually the caffeine that's in it. Sort of a more a corollary question to that is does green tea extract have vitamin K? Because we know that drinking green tea might interfere with certain medications like Coumadin, which is reversed with vitamin K. So they tell you not to drink a lot of green tea when you're taking this blood thinner. And it turns out that they've also devised a way to get much of the vitamin K out of the EGCG so that you got to be a little cautious if you're taking EGCG when you're taking a blood thinner. You know, you every couple of weeks you get your INR checked anyway, but it should not have a big impact. So, yeah, go ahead. Are you concerned that you might get too buzzed out taking EGCG capsules?
Is the decaffeinating process harmful to the product? Versus
no, it retain what they're trying to do is they're trying to retain the active ingredient EGCG, and EGCG is present, and it's assayable. I've done this assay on our own products just to make sure that the product is up to snuff. You know, if it says it's, you know, 20% or 70%, or I think ours is 70%. You can actually chemically analyze it and find that the EGCG is there, intact, undamaged. And that's the business end of green tea when it comes to cancer prevention and a lot of the other benefits. Is it harmful? You know, a question you might ask about coffee. When you decaffeinate coffee, sometimes it's decaffeinated with a chemical processing. They might use something like methylene chloride, which is a dry cleaning solution to, you know, extract the caffeine and leave the coffee. And so many commercial decafs, you know, may have chemical residues, but that's why you get what's called Swiss water process decaf. It's more expensive, but it's less of a harsh process to remove the caffeine. But no, I don't think that there's any harmful chemical residues in EGCG as a result of the caffeine removal. All right, so this item, women, did you know that there are bacteria in your breasts? I'm not talking on your breasts, but in your breasts. If that sounds kind of yucky, well, it's not, because the composition of bacteria in your breasts may determine your risk for breast cancer. This is fascinating. This is in a journal called Applied and Environmental Microbiology. What they did is they examined the pathology specimens of women who either had mastectomies for cancer or healthy women who'd undergone breast reductions. So both had breast tissue taken out. One group had cancer, and the other group, they just wanted to reduce the size of their breasts. And then they analyzed the bacteria from the tissues. It turns out that women with breast cancer had elevated levels of E. coli and Staph epidermidis. Conversely, the healthy women without breast cancer had higher levels of lactobacillus and streptococcus, which are considered to be health-promoting bacteria. And, you know, it turns out that the bacteria may be responsible for free radical damage or inflammatory changes, or conversely, protect the breast from such changes, which may cause DNA mutations that ultimately lead to cancerous tumors. And researchers in Spain have actually shown that probiotic lactobacilli taken orally by women reach the breasts. It's amazing. You take it by mouth, and somehow it travels through your body, gets into your breast. And so the researchers say this raises the question, should women, especially those at risk for breast cancer, take probiotic lactobacilli to increase the proportion of beneficial bacteria in the breast? Well, a study needs to be done because it might be possible to increase the abundance of beneficial bacteria at the expense of harmful ones through probiotics. That's pretty cool. This is truly a benefit of probiotics that I never could have even imagined. It just keeps going on and on and on. And this item, you take your kid for a flu shot, but if you have the option of getting a shot, which your kid's going to hate, scream, yell, or getting the nasal spray flu vaccine, it's a no-brainer, right? You're going to give the kid the nasal spray. And that's been the practice over many years. And they've encouraged kids to get the nasal flu vaccine as an alternative to the shot. Okay, guess what? The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices has recommended that nasal spray flu vaccines not be used during the next flu season. Oops. This is based on data showing that the live vaccine in nasal sprays did not protect children ages 2 to 17 this past flu season. The flu shots, however, were somewhat effective, but the nasal spray, virtually of no value at all. So, you know, and there's been some real fiascos with this flu vaccine. Issues have arisen, such as that in the very population that it was supposed to protect most, the elderly, perhaps the debilitated individuals, that the flu shot doesn't really take, that it offers some protection to healthy individuals who might experience less symptoms anyway with the flu, so no big deal. This is a real reversal that they say, get the shot, not the nasal spray, as they have been saying all along. And this item has to do with the dietary habits of Americans. When it comes to the dietary habits of Americans, it turns out that Americans are overall eating better. There's actually a move towards healthier eating. But unfortunately, you know, like the old song during the Depression, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. From the standpoint of dietary habits, there's a growing disparity between the elite, who might be able to go to Whole Foods, sometimes referred to as Whole Paycheck, and buy exquisite grass-fed organic products, and ethnic minorities, people in the inner city, the impoverished, who are unfortunately not embracing this trend and whose diets are actually worsening in quality. So, you know, the issue in America, they talk a lot in the election about income disparity. We got to talk about diet disparity. Yeah, upscale people have more access to markets, and their income enables them to buy better food, and they're becoming more health conscious, like individuals like yourselves who are listening to this program. But it's not reaching deep into our populace, and therefore the overall health of Americans may be worsening at the very same time that some Americans are becoming more health conscious. 888-302-3684 is our number. Thanks for joining us for this hour. We got a lot more to talk about in hour two, so please stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.